and welcome to Can Queer, home of Ottawa's, Canada's queer media. I forgot who I was and where I was, and we are having a fantastic show today. We are joined by Sir Kira. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
And also leading the show today is the one, the only, Sebastian.
Hello.
So, Sebastian, what is the show?
Yes.
No, I'm not.
So today... I wanted to talk about augmented sex, both as sort of a branch of kink. Like, kink and augmented sex overlap significantly. A lot of different kinds of augmented sex qualify as kink, but there's certain things that are kinky but not necessarily augmented sex. It's kind of a nice little Venn diagram in your head there. But also because...
How do you define augmented sex?
So the way that I want to talk about augmented sex today, because I'm sure there's somebody else out there who has their own little different definition, is that it's a way of making the sexual experience or sexual arousal more intense. And it's just basically a way of sort of taking however you normally experience sex and just sort of like dialing it up to 11 a little bit. Now, partly this sort of rolls into our ongoing topic. We did invite Wanda to come in today, but she couldn't make it.
She's in the Dominican Republic, I think.
As one does.
Yeah.
So it does kind of fall into that, but also how augmented sex can be used medically for people with sexual dysfunction or challenges, let's say, sexually. So it's kind of this nice two-way thing, and a lot of it is aspects of... sexual practice that we don't often talk about. So normally when we talk about things like spanking, for example, it's normally in the context of role play, of sort of dom sub, of like naughty nurse and naughty patient, or I don't know, whatever we normally do, whatever story we normally tell. But here today I want to talk about some of the more sort of like biophysical medical applications of some of these things that can help people, or... just as a nice little fallout, if you don't have sexual dysfunction, it can make things more intense for you.
Mm.
So that's the direction we're going in.
And I'm glad that you're joining us on this show, Sebastian and Sakira, because you mentioned, you know, spanking earlier, and I think the closest I've got to anything along that, I was covering the Miss Leather Ottawa competition, and I won a cheese board, which I have ever since used as a cheese board. Just to give you an idea of
what kind of a person you are.
Yeah. I'm so vanilla, I make a Victoria sponge. Mm. So that's kind of where I'm at.
You're so vanilla, you're two eggs short of a meringue. Shall we keep going, or shall we get the show started?
Let's get the show started.
I mean, I'm fine either way. I'm okay making fun of you a little bit more.
I like making fun of him. It makes sense to me.
Apparently, some of our listener commentary has indicated that they also enjoy it when I make fun of you.
Yeah,
a little
apparently
bit more.
One of the things you folks like the best is when I get picked on. So that's fine. And apparently, this is going down a storm. So we actually, speaking of how much the audience likes you teasing me, we actually won an award, the best syndicated show at local FM out of St. John, New Brunswick. I want to do a shout out to the folks there, amazing people, and they do some really incredible programming on that station. So if you're listening to us at local FM in St. John, New Brunswick, we want to thank you so much. For, you know, participating in the awards and kind of choosing us as your best in syndicated. There was some really good competition.
I'm glad to hear this too.
Yeah.
Although the way that Luke told me, by the way, is he just messaged me and asked me what size shirt I wear, because somebody wanted to send me a shirt from another radio station, and I was like, why? And he's like, because they want your picture taken in it. And I was like, what's going on? And then he's like, that thing, you know, that thing. Ugh.
Yeah, see, he says that, but I posted it to Facebook and it had hit like 300 people had seen it, and I had 50 comments, and I just assumed that you'd looked at it. Apparently you don't look at my Facebook.
Well, no, the Facebook app melts down my phone whenever I open Facebook. The battery heats up.
You're not even the first person to mention that about the Facebook app.
See?
And he's not even got an iPhone, not a Samsung 7 Note. Like, that's...
No, this is an LG.
Oh.
But anyway.
We digress.
Yeah.
If you want to hear some different community radio, though, check out the website. We recently just cross-posted Rainbow Radio, which is a new show out of CJSW in Calgary. So check it out. These are a great show looking at gender identity. So nice. Definitely worth looking at. Now, we had some other news. I can't remember what it is. But check the website, www.canqueer.news. No, that was just funny. That was just funny.
If by funny you mean kind of grim.
Yeah, but we'll move on.
Yeah.
So, Sebastian.
Hello.
Take it away.
Okay. So I just introduced Augmented Sex. Right. Okay. So first, let's talk about the kinds of things that I know Shakira is super eager to talk about.
Okay.
So let's talk about blood pooling.
Okay.
Ooh.
Okay. So this sounds really kind of weird, like some kind of fetish to end all fetishes. But really, this is the end game of a lot of different kinds of fetishes. That really what you're trying to do is get a lot of blood in one spot. So do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Now, I just want to clarify for the sake of our listeners, and that's blood pooling within the body.
Within the body.
Because I immediately pictured like a horror movie with like, you know,
Freddy Krueger, a couple of little talons going there.
Blood's literally pooling. And that's not what we're talking about here.
No.
We're not recommending serial murder.
Right.
Okay, good.
Right, okay. So there's sort of two stages. Well, okay, so I guess three stages, really, to spanking. So you've got, like, your light tapping, which is more like your role-playing. Then on top of that, you've got a little bit more hard spanking. And then on top of that, you have really hard spanking. And the difference between them isn't just how hard you spank, but really what the results is.
What the end game is.
Exactly.
Yeah, when you were actually speaking about the difference between role-play and, for example, where we're leaning into, the first thought I had was the difference between domination and submission, and those of us who are into S&M.
Right.
Yeah.
With S&M, for the folks listening, is sadism and masochism.
Sometimes there's no role play. Like, sometimes there's a lot more cooperation. A lot more, how are you doing down there? I'm doing great. You need to do that a little bit more. Okie doke. Like, it's a little bit less, like, tell me what you want. Just kidding. You don't get an option.
I find that, so in my relationship, we tend to do both. It's an enhancement on both parts of it, mm-hmm. so to speak. So the role play is what sets the mood, mm-hmm. and the sadism and the masochism is what gets you off.
So something to bear in mind is you know, all those pictures of hilarious, like, baboons, chimpanzees, and like all the monkeys with those huge butts.
Yep.
That like inflate when they're aroused.
Yeah.
Humans don't lack that. So we don't have a butt that triples in size and turns purple when we're aroused, but we do have similar nerve endings in there. We actually do have sort of highly erogenous zones in the butt, especially towards the middle, sort of like on the peak of the dome and curving inwards a little bit. Those areas, if you stimulate them enough, I'm not playing the bongos. Do not make that joke.
For the folks listening who can't see Sebastian's hand movements, he's just tapping his hands like he's playing the bongos.
Yeah.
I think Aerosmith did that on one album. They called them the flesh bongos, yes.
So the when you're getting in there and you're sort of stimulating the area, there's like nice little like and then after a while of like after a while, yeah, you're worried about peeking. That's fine. And also tapping a microphone is just bad form, but whatever. There's a little poofy thing here.
I was going to make a reference to peeking, but let's move on with the example.
It's got the fuzzy thing.
Stop. Stop molesting the microphone.
So after a while of hitting hard enough and long enough, you get more blood in the area than usual. You're getting sort of light bruising that sort of stimulates the area, and then all the nerve endings get alive.
Now, it is worth mentioning that, always get permission.
Oh, yes.
And consent, enthusiastic consent. There's there's safe, sane, and consensual, and there's another one.
RAC, risk-aware consensual kink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what is to RAC?
Okay, so safe, sane, and consensual is pretty much the politically correct side of BDSM or kink. Mm-hmm. And RAC is everybody else who's been in there for a good long while and realizes that sometimes you could get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But are strong enough in who they are to be able to stop a scene.
Okay. And that is where the risk aware comes in.
That's absolutely.
Absolutely. Now, so for folks listening, you're probably going to stick with safe, sane, and consensual,
mm-hmm.
Where you can't be legally insane. That's a pretty good
standard. Well, we're going to start off, you're not drunk, you're not totally out there, you're talking beforehand, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Now, this is where it moves very interestingly into some of the whisper conversations that we had, because we put it out there. Have you folks, and for people who don't know what Whisper is, it is a social networking app, a media app, social app.
I would put the word anonymous first before any of that, because it's sort of driven by the fact that it's anonymous posting.
And people sort of whisper things. Mm-hmm. And it could be anything. I mean, we're in the basement of a basement, so I can't pull it up and do examples. But, you know, so we put down, has anyone ever had intercourse with, under the influence? And the amount of responses we got from people anonymously just letting us know what they think mm-hmm. was phenomenal. But what's really interesting is when you look at the idea of being safe and sane and consensual, not all of the folks who got in touch with us kind of followed that. Now, of course, that raises a lot of real ethical problems. So if you're going to engage in something, make sure, absolutely make sure that you have the consent at all times. Of course, people can withdraw consent, and you can't really consent under the influence.
So well, legally, you definitely couldn't consent under the influence. But if we were kind of to look where the line is, if it was a brand new partner, there would be no alcohol, no other stimulants involved. But longer-term couples and couples who do talk to each other and are interested in exploring things, that's where we start moving into that rack area again. Yeah.
See, now for myself and my partner, bearing in mind 2 eggs short of a meringue, we will come to an agreement that things may happen that evening and crack open a bottle of wine.
Absolutely.
So by the time we get to the evening, you know, things get a little sloppy. And actually, that was the most common comment that people gave us on Whisper, was that things got somewhat sloppy because alcohol was usually involved.
You're a very sloppy drunk.
I am a very sloppy drunk, yeah. I'm quite hands-on as well, which gets me into trouble. But
I think that's why people use those type of enhancements to begin with, is our society is quite conservative, and as much as we like to be open, Canadian society tends to talk about sex in the third party.
Yeah, it's very abstract.
Yeah, and it's hard to get out of that. It's hard to develop a relationship with somebody and not talk to them in that third party sense. As soon as we have a glass of wine or whatever, we start getting into that first person spot again.
Yeah.
And we feel we can actually open up. So I'm not surprised a lot of people are enhancing with alcohol.
You know, I have found, and it's been a learning curve, that I have to check in more often. I'm like, I would like to do this thing. And then I say it as it is, and then I get a yes or a no. Mm-hmm. And it has done wonders, because I would not talk. And we have discussed, as we've talked about so many times on this show, communication is absolutely fundamentally important.
If I could give anything to any people who are involved in any sort of non-traditional types of sex, it would be that if you could explain what you would like at the beginning, and then for me and my partner, we have almost like a football talk at the end. So you were in the end zone the other day, and we were doing literally over a sandwich in the kitchen afterwards. Not a personal judgment. It's not a personal judgment. One of the rules we have is that your orgasm is your business. So you're the only one who knows what you like, when you like it, and how you like it. Once you really personalize that kind of a statement, then we're into, okay, so when you did this, it wasn't working for me, or it was really working for me. We need to explore that area a little bit more.
And I think that speaks an awful lot to agency and having agency over your own body and agency over your own sexuality. Now, we may talk about things other than alcohol later in the show.
Yes.
We had lots of feedback, and I know that Sebastian's done quite a bit of research into it.
Well, a bit.
But before we do, we got told by a listener, and who is actually the station manager at CHUO 89.1 FM in Ottawa, about an album called, it was by Love is a Drag, and we're going to play the song The Boy Next Door. But what's really interesting about this is that it was released in 1962, and it is believed to be the first album for a gay male audience. So it's a male singer singing love songs to another male. And then we're talking the 60s here, so this almost very, like, you know, one wouldn't dare. Nobody put any names on it. There was no producer names, no singer names, no guitarist names, nothing. So
it was
no,
just a slab of vinyl.
Absolutely, with a pretty picture on the front, and that was it. So it could never be identified. Now, it wasn't until about 2005, 2010, around then, that somebody discovered it and was doing research, and they found... The person, Murray Garrett, was a photographer, and he knew somebody starting a record studio, and they were like, we want to make a bit of a splash. Mm-hmm. And how do we do that? And he goes, I have an idea from when he was way back in visiting gay bars in the village. And he's like, why don't we get a man singing May Love Song? And they couldn't find a singer. So then he asked his photography partner, Gene Howard, oh, who had a wife and kids at the time. It was the 60s.
Yeah.
Every homo had a wife and kids. And it almost didn't happen.
Except for Liberace.
It almost didn't happen until the wife said, you know, would it be done with dignity? And, of course, they said, yes, it's not a comic album. And the album got made. So it is possibly the first recorded album for a gay audience. Yeah. And this is Love is a Drag, and we'll be playing The Boy Next Door. See you in a minute.
The moment I saw him smile, I knew he was just my style. My only regret is we've never met, for I dream of him all the while. But he doesn't know I exist, no matter how I may persist. So it's clear to see there's no hope for me, though I live at 5135 Kensington Avenue, and he lives at 5133. How can I ignore the boy next door? I love him more than I can say. Doesn't try to please me, doesn't even tease me, and he never sees me glance his way. And though I'm heart sore, the boy next door, affection for me won't display. Adore him, so I can't ignore him, the boy next door.
Hello, and welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. Now, we are having an exciting conversation. We just heard Love is a Drag, mm-hmm. and we talked a bit about that, and we got some more golden oldies coming up later in the show.
So I'm glad you went into depth on consent, because okay. a lot of the things on this list are things that won't work without consent and won't work without trust. Mm-hmm. Without it, you'll just get panic.
Yeah,
so,
and statutory rape.
Well, yes, for example.
Yeah.
So... mild spanking Or spanking until you get a nice red glow. That's how you get to that first, like, baboon butt stage, for lack of a better word.
You sound like a man with experience.
Baboon butt? Well, you know,
I'll tell you about that day. Baboon butt. Baboon.
Also,
good.
Not baboon, but baboon.
Baboon butt. Baboon.
Baboon. Anyway, so in order to get to that point, like, that's a while. You don't get to there in 30 seconds or less.
I could almost dispute that one.
Oh my.
I mean, if you were talking about a brand new person involved in that kind of thing, yeah, I would totally agree with you. But people who have been doing it for a while, absolutely not.
Okay. But still,
so experience brings expediency.
Experience changes your physiology. Oh, you, so if I have been spanking somebody week after week after week, maybe the first week they might have a slight bruising, week two, little less. By week five, there's nothing. Mm-hmm. I would pretty much have to bring out a 2x4 to make the body do that. So it's not a guarantee. But if we're talking about the area in between, how did
the
you
bongo
describe
drums?
That would be the one. Now that area in specifically does not have that reaction. So if we're talking about the buttocks, the actual roundness of the bottom, mm-hmm. that'll go red or not go red. It's not indicative of how hard or how soft you are actually striking somebody. Mm-hmm. But that particular area, now we're getting into the good stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's that tends to swell regardless.
Mm-hmm. But even if you got there without consent, you're not going to enjoy it. Because it'll just be, oh, I'm being insulted.
Well, consent...
Not to trivialize.
Yeah.
Consent's a funny thing, you know. I've taught quite a few workshops on consent, and usually the analogy I use is, okay, so I am a skydiving instructor, okay? And I'm going to teach you how to skydive on the ground, obviously. I'm going to give you lessons. I'm going to give you a suit. I'm going to show you the correct position to get into. And before we get into the plane, I'm going to have you sign a consent form. Are you qualified to sign that consent form? The answer is no.
Yeah.
Of course not, because you've never done it before. Mm-hmm. You have no idea what's in store for you, even though you have all the information. So it's not just consent, but the ability to make it stop, I think, is way more important. And whether or not you're in a long-term relationship or a short-term relationship, having that autonomy to say, I'm done, regardless of the other person's want or need, is really where it comes down to. Because some people, the very first time, you could go on for a very long time. Other people, it's two whacks and you're done.
Now, this is where safe words come in common. And folks may be now familiar with safe words because of that movie with that female comedian who's now being banned.
You're going to talk about pineapple again, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to pineapple. Ours is banana. Yeah. Anyway.
It's also the Wi-Fi password.
So the reason why I started with spanking is because spanking, at least to somebody uninitiated, seems kind of soft relative to some of the other kinds of augmented sexual practices that can happen. So choking is another one.
Choking
without consent results in panic and not sexual arousal.
And is illegal. Don't choke without consent.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, actually, this Securus point is actually really good point here, that like they're saying, yeah, okay, do it. And then there's actually understanding what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You may not enjoy it the same way the first few times until you really understand what's involved.
Yeah. And having that autonomy. So usually where people get into their trouble with either choking or spanking or whatever is the inability to say no. Mm-hmm. Which is either we put something in the mouth or we've tied people up or whatever else you thought was going to make a really good scene. Giving people the ability to get experience means that you're not going to have great scenes the first time. Mm-hmm. You're going to purposely not put things in their mouth. You're going to purposely not tie them up. I usually use the one of, say, you want to spank somebody or flog somebody or whatever that is. I say, okay, you're going to put your hands on the wall. The minute your hand, finger, anything comes off that wall, I stop. Mm-hmm. And I will not continue until they go back up. Mm. So they are psychologically restrained, but they are not physically restrained.
Yep.
Because I need them to be able to stop even if their body gives up, even if their mind gives up, all those pieces. It's just a different way of looking at it, you know.
And in some ways, psychological restraint is more meaningful
Because, you think so?
Well, I mean, in the sense that from within versus being tied down, because I don't know, it's fighting against yourself versus fighting against a physical restraint versus fighting against an object. I guess it depends on what kind of person you are, really.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's a personality driven thing. Yeah. Yeah.
So other things I put on this list is electro. And by the way, since we're actually part of this episode was talking about health issues, if you have any kind of neurological condition, electro will have unpredictable results. So if you have any kind of neurologically based cognitive disorder, so I mean, I learned this, by the way, this is how I discovered this. I actually have a sleep disorder that is neurological in nature. It's kind of related to narcolepsy. And we were at Wanda's, we were meeting with someone and people were bored. And then somebody was like, hey, let's get out the electro wand and play with this. I was like, cool. And it touched.
When we say play with it, they were just zapping each other in the arm. Yeah. I'm just like trying to clarify.
Zapping each other, seeing like basically how strong is it? What does it feel like? What do you get out of it?
Right.
And it was on the lowest setting, on the back of my hand, and my entire left arm went numb for a day.
Ooh.
Okay.
That is a severe reaction.
That is a severe reaction. And when I looked it up, it actually turns out that this kind of extreme reaction is not necessarily exceptional. Other people with other neurological disorders, they get the opposite, where they're super, super, super sensitive, but in the yay kind of a way.
I've found, like, this is going to sound a little weird, but the people who have very moist skin or wet, almost wet feeling skin, feel it a lot more. Mm-hmm. Like you can almost look at their body and go, oh, you've got a lot more moisture in your skin. You're going to feel this. Like I do not enjoy a wand on my skin ever. Mm-hmm. It feels like a needle being dragged through my skin.
It's for me, it was like static shocks, you know, which, I mean, my cat's a nightmare for
now, me. When this same person put the wand in her pocket and then tickled me with her fingers.
Yeah.
That was nice. That felt completely different. But it's really dampened down at that point in time.
Yeah.
Also, the way that the static actually flows through your fingers is a little bit different than it would through a wand.
If you want to know more about electrostim, we do actually have an entire episode on that where, if I recall, Seamus has kept zapping himself during the course of our show. You can find that actually at thevelvetstudio.ca under Wicked Wonders, one of those episodes. Electrostim should be easy to identify. One of the things, just before, if we were moving from this topic, if you have any kind of pacemaker.
Yes.
Bad idea.
Pacemakers, heart conditions, neurological conditions, yeah. Epilepsy.
Actually, you would be amazed at how many types of augmented sex are not a good idea if you have a heart condition.
Yeah.
Well,
actually, the next one is the opposite of everything we've talked about so far. So instead of intensity, it's lightness. So tickling, also milking and extended play.
I will murder somebody in their sleep if there's tickling.
Tickling is not... So one of the big reasons I'm involved in this scene is because I do not enjoy ever light touch. I do not like to be lightly caressed. It drives me... Like, I just want to punch somebody in the head. You know, like, it's not comfortable. I'm a deep tissue girl, definitely. You know, I can't imagine being tickled. And when you mentioned that we would be talking about tickling, it's like totally not my area.
But still, extended play, withholding and milking when you bring somebody to the edge but don't let them finish for hours.
Awesome.
In some cases, yeah.
Awesome.
So usually what you do, you're looking at me like, So you do whatever your normal technique
I was just thinking, like, you're going to have to carve out like half a day.
Yeah,
I'm just thinking scheduling-wise, I mean, that's...
Well, basically, okay, so here's the idea. You do whatever you do.
I'm still back on you're not carving out half a day a week to have sex. You're missing some seriously good times here.
So if you walk away with anything from this show, is make sure you schedule about half a day.
We do about 4 hours tonight, 2 hours tomorrow morning, about another 4 hours on Saturday, another 2 hours on Sunday morning.
How'd you get anything done?
And then maybe two more times during the week. Because it's that important.
Basically, it's a hobby at this point.
No, it's not a hobby.
That's like
it's an addiction.
That's like Game of Thrones.
And it's not to brag. I'm totally not on the bragging thing because we don't bring that up very often because it makes people so uncomfortable. Mm. But it is great stress relief. It's great
Absolutely.
Intimacy. It's everything. Mm. Why wouldn't you want to spend some time doing that and getting it right?
Well, maybe not for folks listening 4 hours, multiple times a week. But I think what you have really hit here is the importance of, augmented or not, making time to spend time intimately with your loved one. I think that's something that we can all echo and go, you know what, yes, maybe I should. Sometimes spontaneity is fun, but sometimes knowing that on Sunday we're going to have a good time, you know, you can plan around that for sure.
And don't we confuse intimacy most of the time? Mm. Intimacy isn't always about how I emotionally feel. I love you. Mm. You know, I want to be with you. No. I want to use you and I want to abuse you. I want to have some fun. Or vice versa. Yeah. You know, I think media has kind of like shifted so much of it onto that love and sex are to be together. Mm. And that's great when you can have it, but they can also be separate. Right.
You know, it's interesting because one of the topics that almost never gets talked about in the gay community is asexuals. Now, people assume that asexuals don't want any sex. But then if you break it down to aromanticism or eroticism, you know, people can fall in love, you know, but they might not want any sex, which is they're aerotic, or they might just want sex but never really have that capacity or that inkling to kind of form romantic attractions.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes asexuals enjoy sex, but they have no drive. So if you... I'll do it if you want to. Oh, I actually really enjoyed it at that time. But it's sort of like, I don't know, like making an omelet where you know...
Scheduling might help. Well, yeah, on Sunday, you know, we do have it in the agenda.
So. Yeah, it is in the agenda, And actually, a lot of this stuff, as you mentioned, planning ahead, you know, some of these things, planning ahead is very...
No, all of these things.
Very helpful.
All the time. I think we have exactly that, romanticized what making love is through the movies. And we think that it's all supposed to be spontaneous and very little planning. Planning is everything.
In the Torah, in the Old Testament and Torah, it says you are supposed to set aside the night before the Sabbath or the Shabbats. And that is the night you make love to your spouse. Mm-hmm. Come hell or high water, one night a week, guaranteed, you make love with your spouse that night. Why it's actually in there is it keeps the engine running. Like, you can't have spontaneous sex if you're not in the mood. And the best way to get in the mood is to keep the engine running.
Yeah. Now, we actually, one of our former guests, Heather, who was doing our Horny with Heather episode, she studied postmenopause in women. And one of the best ways to remain healthy in postmenopause is actually just to keep the engine running.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's absolutely medically, that's one of the best ways to keep.
I can totally vouch for that.
Going up and down.
I'm telling you, it's the only way to get through menopause.
So on that lovely note, Sebastian, what's next?
Why don't we go to a song and I'll tell you about the Dutch when we get back.
Okay, absolutely. So earlier I said that Love is a Drag came out in 1962, but Little Richard released in 1955, 56, Tutti Frutti, but it is not a gay song. Which is very disappointing. But he told the Penthouse in 95 that he was gay identified. Before 56, he'd been arrested for peeping on people at urinals. He'd been, you know, kicked out of his home for, you know, his thing was to be in cars whilst a couple enjoyed themselves in the car with him. He got arrested a couple of times for that.
But, so Little Richard was the first rock and roller to live what we came to know as the rock and roll lifestyle. He was banned from two separate chains of hotels because they kept having to kick him out for having large orgies in the bedroom.
That was in the late 60s.
orgies as well. Yeah.
So this song we're about to play was actually picked up by Elvis just a couple of years later. So this is Tutti Frutti from Little Richard, and we'll be back just after this.
Womp, bomp, loom, bomp, lomp, bomp, bomp, tutti frutti, oh, who? She rocked to the west, but she's the gal that I love best. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy. Tutti frutti, yes indeed. Boy, you don't know what you do to me. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy. 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 Bop, bop, bop. What you do to me, to the booty?
And welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. Now, be sure to check out some Canadian news at www.canqueer.news. Now, Sebastian, the Dutch.
The Dutch. So years ago, I was at a conference in Paris, and then because I was already on the continent, I just messaged a whole bunch of friends that I had met online during my internet chat room years, and I was like, I'm actually in the area. Who would like to meet with me? And I had a couple of friends who lived in The Hague. And I went up to visit them, and story, the relevant part is the conversation where we get to this part. It came up that they were a little bit upset with the North American, like as a whole, North America, Canada is a little bit more progressive, but we're still terrible relative to Europe as a whole, with regards to how we treat sexual health. So in the Netherlands, sexual health is considered to be a part of general mental health, and mental health is considered to be a general part of general health. And if you are not a healthy person, you're not going to be as good at your job. You're not going to be a good worker. You're not going to participate in society to the same degree. Bearing in mind that the Netherlands has a very interesting form of socialism where like it is actually collectivist responsibility. So the reason why the canals and the sluices and the dikes are hundreds of years old is because if you live near one, you are expected to monitor it. And you're expected to occasionally fill in a report and hand it in at the local office to be like, I found a loose stone. We need to fix that before everything collapses and the whole country floods. And I'm not exaggerating.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. But I mean, if everybody does their bit a little bit every day, everything's all fine. So you want the whole country to be as healthy as possible because everybody is collectively responsible for everything.
Yeah. I mean, and if someone's unwell, who's going to look after the dikes?
Well, exactly. Exactly. Yes, lesbian joke.
Yeah, I know.
So as a result of this, they actually take sexual health very seriously. It was one of my favorite Ig Nobel Prizes. So the Ig Nobels are the Nobel Prizes for silly science. Was in 2004, I think. They took two skinny people and they put them in an MRI machine and filmed their guts as they had sex. Mm-hmm. Just to see if it could be done.
Yes, finally.
And totally by accident, they ended up revolutionizing sexual health because they discovered things. Because they're just like, let's see if it can be done. Like, the Dutch are really crazy. They're so much fun.
Wasn't that when they discovered, like, the penis bends or something?
Yes. The vaginal walls are actually more firm than a penis is. And the penis bends into the shape of the vaginal walls.
I concur. It's totally true.
there's footage. You can look it up on YouTube.
I mean, safe switch on.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but it
well, it's MRI, so it's cross-section. You also see their intestines. By the way, a woman's intestines jiggle a lot more than you think it would during sex. Like, they're all over the place.
Well, yeah, the whole intestine thing is designed to shift and move up when you get pregnant. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So yeah. I could see it not being as attached as
it was
men.
Part of this conversation was the idea of anorgasmia, like the inability to have an orgasm as a condition worthy of medical attention. Because in North America, our priority when you're talking about sexual health is reproduction. Hmm. If you can get it up, if you're a man, you can get it up and you can ejaculate, you are sexually healthy. If you're a woman and you can get pregnant, you are sexually healthy.
And you can have 2.5 children and a white Ford Fiesta.
Yes. And, well, silver these days, but...
Or a Prius.
Or a Prius.
Tell me about the Prius.
So it's a huge difference in how we think about sexual health. That, like, if you are capable of the mechanisms of having sex, but you don't enjoy it whatsoever, or there's a huge disconnect. So ejaculation and orgasm are not the same mm-hmm. in men. And in women, orgasm and the usual physiological responses of, like, raised heart rate and sweating and all that, it's not the same. Like, there's a lot of cases of men and women who have the normal physiological reactions. They emit fluid, but mm-hmm. then they're just like, oh, ho-hum. Did it happen? You tell me. And it is a thing that can happen for men and women. So with women, it's a little bit more talked about because sexual revolution was largely driven by feminism. But it's not as discussed with men. But in the Netherlands, it totally is, that on both sides, if you have problems with sex, it is something that a doctor takes note of because it's good for your sexual well-being, good for your mental health, and then therefore good for everything, your social well-being, your, in some cases, your workplace well-being. It goes on.
Okay. I've heard that, and same on the other side is if you insist here in Canada, you can get that help. But you have to insist.
Because it's really hard, and quite often they send you off to a sex therapist who's not covered by OHIP, depending on what it is. If it is mechanical and you get sent to a urologist or a gynecologist or there's a third one who could help you out, but I can never remember what they're called, then yes, if it's a mechanical problem, you have a pinched nerve, you have a blocked urethra, you have low estrogen or your progesterone's too high or your prolactin's too high or something like that. Like, there's a mm-hmm. whole bunch of things it could be. Endocrinology actually would be one of those. Endocrinology is the study of hormones. So an endocrinologist could just test your various hormones and be like, yeah, your prolactin's too high. You can't orgasm as a man. Or if you're a woman, your prolactin's not high enough. But sometimes it's not that easy. And so they say, well, you have to get a sex therapist. I hope you're middle class. So
yeah,
that's less the case in the Netherlands.
There also aren't that many of them. Sex therapy is not only not covered in Ontario. I'm not sure about other provinces. Maybe let us know. Tweet us, Talk and Queer, if sex therapy is covered where you are, or drop us a message on our website mm-hmm. Or Facebook. But where was I going with this? There also aren't that many of them that work with men. So actually, yeah. A new one just opened up in Ottawa that kind of takes patients in Arabic, which mm-hmm. is breaking ground. But can you imagine that, where that service wasn't there?
I've heard of one other service in Ottawa that does have sex therapy for men, but they roll it into trauma therapy. Mm. So if you have troubles with sex because of a personal trauma, PTSD of some kind, then you can go to them. So, I mean, it's highly specialized, and it does not detract from your point that it's exceptional. So as a part of this conversation with this nice Dutch man, mm-hmm. he pointed out that this is one of the reasons why in the Netherlands and Germany, they have such a reputation for kink.
Mm. Kind of like Quebec.
So
where I live.
the levels of kink that you see in the Netherlands and Germany, they view it as corresponding to the levels of sexual dysfunction that's happening in secret under the hood that people aren't willing necessarily to share. Some of the augmented sex is just people looking for a little bit more of a good time than usual, and some of it is people who are looking for any time whatsoever where they don't feel like it was, you know, well, there's 6 hours down the can and now I need a shower, and I didn't get anything out of it. So it's like you get...
Should have been watching Game of Thrones.
Should have been watching Game of Thrones.
I mean, you know, at that point.
Yeah.
Binge watch.
Although I have been watching a lot of Big Fat Quiz lately.
Yeah, my new big thing is Serious Unfortunate Events, which I read as a child a long time ago, mm-hmm. And I sort of vaguely get it.
You weren't a child a long time ago.
And shush. And just the... it's yeah, really interesting.
It was like 2 weeks ago. Come here, little boy. Let me explain the book to you.
I literally just turned 26. So it's like, what?
It is your birthday today.
It is my birthday, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on.
Yes.
What was I saying?
You're 26?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you realize that my oldest child is older than you?
So I wanted to move on to, that was sort of the introduction to the medical side.
What were we going to talk about regarding the Dutch? Because as far as I can see, when it comes to the Dutch in reflection to North America or with Germany and all that kind of mm-hmm. things, is more of a, how we view sex and therefore how we're going to treat it medically at all.
Yeah.
Because
their attitude is that it's part of life. Like, one of the reasons why they legalized the sex trade is because when you take the sex trade out of the shadows, it changes the atmosphere completely. Mm-hmm. Like, if you have a sexually frustrated 22-year-old, they're not going to Rohitnol a girl at a party. They're going to save up $50 and go to the red light district.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're being optimistic there with $50.
Well, I mean,
something's going to happen with $50.
You can do something with $50. All right, okay. Yeah,
we're pretty sure.
Yeah, and it's the red light district. There's always that one person who's trying to undercut the competition. So.
I mean, I've been to the red light district. Beautiful architecture.
It is.
Oh my gosh.
Let's talk about the architecture in the red light district.
It's right on one of their canals. It's a gorgeous part of town.
Actually, I was there doing Amsterdam Pride, and their biggest concern was not like STDs or terrorism. It was
people
drug
falling
tourists
in the canals.
Falling in the canal.
Yeah, it is actually a common problem they have there. Yeah.
Because they're in like sardines. Like there's no. Yeah. Anyway, we're moving on.
But yeah, their attitude towards sex is that it's a part of life. It's a being human is being sexual. And it's not in this sort of, you know, horny, horny, horny kind of thing. It's just like you are built as a sexual being. It's part of being a human.
So if we're looking at the body as being part of the mind, part a holistic view of the body. Let's go with a holistic view. It's going to be a while before we have some acceptance on that because it's still incredibly medical here. Mm-hmm. Incredibly.
It's interesting how culture kind of feeds into it as well. Now, in the gay community, we've talked on this show about GHB and chemsex and kind of the rise of that. When we reached out to the community, actually nobody told me about that. So it isn't very big in North America.
But how much of it is... So gay men are more likely to have trauma and depression than straight men. Mm. So gay men are also, by extension, more likely to have sexual dysfunction than straight men.
But there's also
but you don't hear a lot of people talking about using drugs to augment sex in order to actually get a better sexual experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's also a lingering cultural, so the role the paupers play in gay sex actually was debated at the House of Parliament in the UK when they were looking at legislation around paupers. Now, for folks who may not know, and I actually had to explain to somebody on Whisper what it did. It's effectively a blood thinner. Mm-hmm. Gives me headaches. I tried it once, massive migraine. But it thins the blood, and that's where it makes things go easily more where they should go. It relaxes mm-hmm. some muscles.
Yeah.
But that is essentially what it is. It's mm-hmm. essentially you're sniffing paint thinner mm-hmm. at that point. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it has to do with knowing what you're going into. But yeah, we haven't really touched on that, how cultures kind of influence sexual augmentation as well.
Well, yeah. Well, also how okay it is. So the idea of, I'm going to go with the medical ones first.
Okay.
So Viagra and Cialis. Okay. Mm. These, or that entire class of, let's just call them boner pills. You know, that's the medical term, obviously. Or the Latin of pilum boneris.
Yeah. Good for you.
The made up Latin. I love made up Latin, just like in Harry Potter. Anyway, a lot of that does work quite well, but a lot of it is also available on the black market because it can work quite well. Some of these things, by the way, only work if you take them every day. And if you're taking them every day and you don't have a problem to treat, you're just taking it for sexual side effects, you're doing yourself a disservice. There is an antidepressant. Most antidepressants are known for killing sex drive or causing sexual dysfunction. But there's another one that is known for occasional spontaneous orgasm.
Yay.
And we're not talking about emitting fluid. We're just talking about like the cognitive experience of an orgasm.
So no physiological effect, but
just
no ejaculating.
Your brain goes to fairyland, basically.
But your brain gets it.
Pardon?
What if you're driving?
Well, it's very distracting.
Learn to keep your eyes open is what we're saying.
But the thing is, if you take this medication when you don't have a problem, you get a long list of issues that it's not worth it, basically. But there are other ones that do function. So we know about Viagra, but Viagra is also good for women. So let's just refer to the past 15 years of media for men, and let's talk about women and boner pills. For a second.
Love it. Love it.
Okay.
Let's talk about it.
So, okay. Oh, you, that's right. Earlier on, we talked about it and you had information and opinions.
Oh, definitely. Okay. How about I have definite opinions, like women's health, women's, the clitoris. Can I say the clitoris?
Yeah.
And its rediscovery in the last 4 years and how big it is and how much structure
there is. You
make
it sound like it was lost.
It was completely lost.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because we're in North America again.
We're lost in the bushes.
I'm just going to say mine's bigger than yours, okay? Okay.
Anyway, so okay, a lot of the things that Viagra does for men, it does the analog, because like men and women's genitals are actually analogs of one another's. Like,
exactly.
The labia in women becomes the scrotum in men.
Yes.
It's the same structure.
Yes, and then right behind that we have spongy tissue that is also the same as the structural tissue in the penis that allows it to get hard, the spongy tissue there.
Really, it's kind of interesting how it all kind of...
How you guys are very much like us?
Yeah, well, like, I mean, that everyone... really, we all emerge from a single template.
That's right.
Yeah. So the Viagra for women, it can also increase blood flow to the general area. It's not so much just about like, it's not, it makes blood flow. I mean, it also makes blood flow to the clitoris, but it's just the whole region just goes, hello, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
But as a side effect, it can also cause sexual arousal. Some of that is just because you now all of a sudden have hard, hot genitals and you're like, well, I guess so, eh? Let's do this.
Well, how about the other side of the coin is when it comes to women, comparing to men, we don't see our genitals. We actually have to feel something in order to know that we are aroused. Mm-hmm. If you're totally disconnecting brain from genitals, mm-hmm. if you get what I'm saying. So men have definite visual cues that they're interested, regardless if they're in the mood psychologically or not.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just 8 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah. Or you stood up too fast.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or... whatever. But women, we don't see our own genitals. As even when we want to, it's a very conscious effort involving a mirror, maybe even two, and maybe a friend. You know, like it's pretty difficult. And then imagine even when we get to that spot that now I'm aroused and I'm in a mirror. That's very awkward. We just don't see that. So when somebody talks about medication like Viagra or the like causing swelling in our genitals, for some women who don't get that easily, having a medication like that makes it's very powerful for them.
Mm. Also, it increases lubrication a great deal. Just as a side effect that they're having troubles figuring out, because it doesn't increase pre-cum or ejaculation in men. So they don't know why, but it works for women really well.
Yeah, women pretty much have to be into it in order to for things to happen, you know?
There's also a Parkinson's disease medication called cabergoline, which can help with anorgasmia in men. And if you don't have anorgasmia, by the way, is when you have all the normal physiological sexual function, but you don't actually experience an orgasm.
Well, that's just disappointing.
So like, you can also ejaculate, but not experience pleasure.
That was my question.
Yeah, it's basically like physiological, including ejaculation, but no pleasure.
Oh,
I find this part really fascinating because obviously I'm not a dude, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that ejaculation and orgasm are important to you guys, that it has to happen at the same time, already is fascinating to me, right?
I just find it disappointing if somebody doesn't get the fun. You know, I'm like, I just wanna go. Aww.
Well, some of these augmented sex techniques, especially the ones that we talked about earlier, like if you're into tickling, but like tickling or spanking and all that sort of thing, it can actually give you multiple orgasms to the point where you're just not interested in ejaculating anymore because you are spent.
Exactly.
It can happen.
This is why I love it. This is why I love it with guys. And right there.
If you have troubles orgasming in general anyway, this is the solution, because you get to 5 or 6 orgasms and then you're like, you know what? Never mind the penis. Just don't touch it. Like, it's a solution to some kinds of sexual dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. Now, we hope we have taught the folks listening some things today.
We?
Yeah, we actually have run squared out of time.
We didn't even do a tip of the hat to all the things that we're not supposed to encourage because it's illegal.
Well, I'm pretty sure folks can figure out what
we're talking
not
about.
To because
I would
illegal.
Say one thing, and that is, make sure before you mix anything, because some things do not mix well. Like, as I mentioned earlier, boner pills and poppers, because one thins the blood and the other one increases blood flow, you can actually make your blood run so fast that you can pop a vein, you can get an aneurysm, you can actually, like, you can cause damaging priapism that'll cause you to lose your ability to have a healthy erection for years. Like, don't mix boner pills and poppers. Or if you do, do it very low doses because they it's
Or just don't.
Or just don't.
Just don't. Yeah.
A lot of the sexual enhancing chemicals also don't work very well with the various techniques as well. Mm. So choking with I think it's Viagra is a recipe for a heart attack.
Oh my goodness, that's really not a good idea anyway. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
No.
So always check the internet. And check multiple sites. Don't just go to one place and be like, oh, they say it's all right. But check multiple places.
And talk to someone educated.
Definitely. If you know somebody who's experienced, definitely talk to them before you mix. Mm. First time you do anything, do it half the recommended dose. This includes spanking. However much spanking you normally do half of that. Just to see if you're into it or not.
We're not going to go into depth on mixing here because we've run out of time.
Yeah.
We are playing out with Jackie Shane, who was identified as trans but was in drag at the time. In 1962, same year as Love is a Drag released The Boy Next Door, Jackie Shane released the hit Any Other Way, which we're going to play in a second, where if you listen carefully, there's the double entendre use of the word gay, because in the 60s it still sort of meant happy. But Jackie Shane was very much a gay man,
yeah.
And it was known, so you knew. So maybe it's up for dispute whether or not Jackie Shane or Love is a Drag was the first openly gay, but we'll see.
You know, it's going to be some, like, 1920s British banjo song. Oh. Because there was thousands of them.
Not banjos.
Not banjo, like ukulele jazz.
Anyway, that's all you've got time for today. Check us out next week, www.canqueer.news. Thanks for listening.
And you say that you're my friend, but I don't know why you're here. She wants to know how I feel. Tell her that I'm happy. Tell her that I'm gay. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. Been apart. And when I pass, I hear them whisper, there he goes with a broken heart. But when you see my baby, here's what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. Better say goodbye. I think you'd better go right now, or you might see me cry. But when you see my baby, this is what you say. Tell her I wouldn't have it any other way. I just won't have